Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Today, the Padres wrap up their latest series in Cincinnati, and we've got Mike Grace in studio. Well, today he's Mike Grace. Tomorrow he might be something else.
I want to be named after a Patrick Swayze character.
Mike? He was never a Mike in any movie?
No, can you start calling me Dalton?
You look like a Dalton.
See, I thought you'd be bigger.
Yeah, no, you kind of look like a Dalton.
We've also got Bill Center, who's really excited to be here so early on a Sunday.
The only time he gets more excited is when Blooper angers him.
What's happening, Blooper?
Don't even.
Phil the astronaut. He was almost an astronaut once.
No,
really?
Did you
go to space camp?
No, I did not.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Mike Grace and Bill Center.
Welcome to Padres Social Hour. If you could see looks... They
I'm
can gonna kill.
Have to kill Blooper.
You're just staring right through him right now.
Unbelievable.
Welcome to the show. It's an early Sunday morning, early for television at least. Bill's been up for many hours, as we just discussed. This is what you do. You get up early every day. But it is early for us to be on TV. Bill, can I just tell you, I've just been having such a fantastic weekend. I saw a live show. I saw a movie. I had a great dinner with the wife. American Pharoah.
Right.
With Victor Espinoza aboard, San Diego, from Mexico, wins the Triple Crown yesterday. The Padres, 4 in a row. What a game yesterday, going for the sweep today. It's just been a really, really great weekend for me, for a lot of San Diegans, and yesterday, man, that was a fun game, a frustrating game in so many ways,
right.
But to get that result was really, really fun.
And a great at-bat from Alonso to get the game even and then kept the two-run single. Great comeback. I think their best comeback of the year.
Really was. I mean, to come back from where they were. And we've talked so much about this team that they have to get on some sort of a roll. You especially have said they need to win 5-6 in a row.
Right.
And the game, the way it started, you're like, dang. You know, just when you thought, okay, they've been playing so well, because the last three games have just been blueprint of how you would want to win a game. Get up a few runs, let your starting pitcher roll through. Maybe they give up a run or two, but you've got a big enough lead that it doesn't really matter.
And the bullpen's really going well, so
exactly,
shut them down
at the end. 6-1 win, 7-1, 5-2, 6-1. Those are perfect wins. And then to have the start that Andrew Cashner did, to have some of the things go on in the field, you just have this feeling like, man, they can't put it all together for so many games in a row. But then to have that comeback, it allows that winning streak that we've been looking for. They've gotten on the plus side of 500 now, which is really important, and hopefully it keeps building that momentum to get that winning streak that has avoided this team.
Well, this is the
long.
First four-game winning streak today.
Right.
That's the first time they've won four straight. I think today's a really important game because you face one of the best pitchers in the National League in Johnny Cueto. If you can get one today and then go into Atlanta with some momentum, at least I'm hoping win three there, at least split, come home, really feel good against the Dodgers. I think that this is a big game today.
It really is, and you've got a few things working for you. Cueto has only had one start since coming off the disabled list, so maybe he's not Johnny Cueto. The Padres have had a decent history of him over the years. Now, last year he was very good against them, but the previous years before that they have had some success
right.
against him. Plus, you've got a whole new lineup compared to last year's lineup, so hopefully some of that will carry over. But just what we've talked about, just – a four-game winning streak, their first of the year. They've really been missing that. And to keep that momentum going, to beat up on a team that they need to win against because
right. They
are into an easier part of the schedule, as we've talked so much about how tough a schedule they've played. So really good to see. And, I mean, they haven't won very many first games of series, giving them a chance to either, A, win a series without having to have a rubber match or to sweep a series. And so
right. That's
a big part of this equation as well.
Like to me, win this game, sweep this series, go into Atlanta, hopefully take three or four, and really have some really good momentum coming home. That would be significant.
It would make a big difference, especially coming into that Dodgers series.
Right.
Because if you can win these games that you're talking about, the numbers that you're talking about, the Dodgers have struggled a little bit. The Giants are still playing fairly well. Actually, everybody in the division's won a few games recently. But get that close to the Dodgers and maybe, you know, you've got a chance to get near them, tie them, right, even surpass them if things go well and not well for them. And then that just changes the dynamic of the rest of the season going into the All-Star break, and you're just playing for something different than you were even a week ago when you were six back.
Right.
And it's weird to start talking about the standings at this point in the season, but you need to stay above 500, and you need to stay within striking distance as you get into August and obviously September.
I really think that right now, if a couple things had been a little bit different, the Padres would have been right there with the Dodgers. They would have been five or six. I think that they've had at least four winnable games they've lost, which sort of stick out in my mind. So erase any doubts. Just have a good little streak here. Get going.
So yesterday's game, I think obviously there's two major parts to that game. One, obviously, the Yonder Alonso Grand Slam that ties the game. But probably the most promising thing for most Padre fans has got to be Matt Kemp. And we've talked so much about the struggles he's had, and for him to have a five RBI day, a home run, a double, a big opposite field double, both of his big hits go into the opposite field. That's what you really have been waiting to see from him, expecting to see, and I don't want to get into the trap we've got. Okay, maybe this is the thing that snaps him out. This is the thing that snaps him out, because who knows what's right, actually going to snap him out. But driving the ball the other way, five runs in a nine-run game, those are incredibly positive things.
I'm going to be a little bit of the devil's advocate here, because his home run did not go that deep, and that is a really easy ballpark to hit home runs in.
Sure.
That's the biggest bandbox. Everybody talks about Coors Field being the place to hit. I think it's Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati and Philadelphia are the two best hitter ballparks in the major leagues right now. Outside, well, Tampa. But I do a lot of discounting of batting averages, home runs, and stuff like that where they're hit. And I tend to discount Philadelphia and Cincinnati as much as Coors Field.
Fair, but I'm not going to let you be total Debbie Downer on this one, all right? Chances are that ball isn't caught, even if it's in a different park.
Right.
When you see how maybe that's two doubles
two
to the
doubles,
right center
right.
field gap. So from where he's been, and then to come up with the game tied, bases loaded, against a reliever who's throwing 101, who struck
right.
out
gets
Will
the ball
Venable.
Through the left side of the infield, right.
And to put Goodwood on the ball, we've seen him struggle so much, balls down and away, swinging
right.
at non-strikes, and to break the game open like that in a game they needed to win, this is what you wanted him to be. He was supposed to be a run producer, the leader of this team, and he came through yesterday.
Oh,
so
absolutely. All I'm saying is I don't think the home run would have been a home run.
No, but to see him driving the ball.
Right.
The opposite
no,
way.
I agree with that.
And something Kurt said about a week ago that kind of stuck with me is that he said Matt Kemp's a little different in that he waits to swing a little later than most hitters.
Right.
And that he lets the ball get in and tries to have a really quick bat and has struggled so far this year. So to see him go the other way, to be able to wait to find that pitch, again, who knows if this is going to get him going down the right path to what you want to see, but it's what the team needed yesterday, and I'm very excited about the possibilities. Just to see him smiling, having fun out there, I think is important for this ball club.
That he's getting hot, right. I totally agree. And you know what? To me, the two drives to right and were really significant because they were low outside pitches that he went the other way, which he hasn't been doing. He's been trying to pull everything. So I really like and not just yesterday, but three straight days now, he's looked a lot better at the plate than he's looked in the last month. So that's very encouraging to me.
And obviously the big hit of the game, beyond Matt Kemp's single, the two-run single there to take the lead, but Yonder Alonso, and a really interesting situation. I want to talk a little more about Brian Price and some of his decisions yesterday, because they were curious, to say the least. But they essentially intentionally walked Matt Kemp
right.
to get to Yonder
they
Alonso.
They pitched around Kemp, right.
I mean, there was no doubt about
right.
it. They were not going to give him anything to hit.
Right.
And they bring in the left-hander to face Yonder. And, man, what a great at-bat that was.
Nine
really
pitches.
Battled.
Right.
He really battled. And to get a pitch up, drive the pitch, and he's just looking for something to hit there. And he even said, I was just looking not to get fooled, to drive that pitch. And he's had some success against the Reds, his former ball club, and those are the types of things that, you know, feel great to
and
be able to
make. And he's had success in that ballpark, which is also very – it's good to go to a place where you feel good, you see the ball good, and he's had success at that ballpark.
So that was really exciting, and to be down 7-1 at one point to come back to get that tie, those are the types of games where you feel like, okay, they've got all the momentum on their side, and they're probably going to be able to pull this one out, and just really demoralizing for a team like the Reds where they are with their season. So you've got to take advantage of that, and exactly what they did.
I was surprised to see Price blow up just to get upset the way he did. It's a very unusual managing to me.
Did you miss that rant he went on with the media where he dropped like 38 F-bombs?
I remember that one.
He's got a little bit of that in him, I'd say.
Yeah, but that's not a modern-day managerial strategy. I mean, the game's there was a time where managers used to be able to do that because players weren't making a lot of money. There was a lot of fear of the power that the manager had. Nowadays, you've got to get along with your players. You've got to find a way to get along with them. And I don't think that how he works serves a purpose.
And, I mean, just the main situation that was so bizarre. So, Singrani gives up the grand slam to Alonso. Then he walks the next batter. Brian Price comes out. Now, what's a reliever supposed to think when his manager comes out? Very rarely do you ever see the manager come out to a relief pitcher to talk strategy, to figure
right.
it out. And so he goes to hand him the ball like he's coming out of the game, and Price just lights him up like, I'm not taking you out. Well, okay, maybe he made a poor assumption, but that's what's going to happen 99 times out of 100, and he lights him up in public. You don't ever want to see that with a manager,
no.
just lighting up their players in public like that. That was an embarrassing
right.
thing.
Well, there were two really bad. I mean, if you're the relief pitcher, you don't want to give up the ball. You don't give it up until somebody asks you for it. So, one, Singrani, that's not what he should have done. But for Price to go off like he did is just, I think, to me, and you see it in a lot of businesses now, the way people manage. I think that's a very poor way to manage anything.
Yeah, he handled it very poorly, and that's a good way to lose a locker room, to show up your players in public. And say what you want about Bud Black, whether you think he's a great manager, a poor manager, an average manager. That's one thing he
right.
will never do is publicly get into his players. He keeps everything
right.
behind closed doors.
Right.
People think that he's a player's manager, but I think you have a better understanding of what he will let players know when the time is right and who's around.
And Bud also, like the old closed door meeting, that, you know, everybody waits for the closed-door meeting. Boy, he's reading in the Riot Act now. Bud doesn't believe in closed-door meetings, or at least we don't see it as a member of the media. Bruce Bochy every once in a while would close the doors after a game and just air people out. Well, Bud does it in a way that you don't even know that it's a closed-door meeting, although it is. So you don't hear about even the closed-door meetings with the Padres.
And I think that's why the players respect
but
him.
But he
has. Hard
but
them.
He does. He holds people accountable. More than air people out, he holds people accountable, and they know they're accountable. And if they know they make a mistake, that they're on the wrong side of the manager. They know they've made a mistake. And you can get that point across without airing people out publicly.
That's exactly what he does. When we come back after the next break, going to talk a little bit about some of the weird things that happened in yesterday's game, some of the negative things that, you know, would be remiss if we didn't talk about, even though it was such a fantastic win. But first, Saturday, June 13, marks the season's first Summer Sky Blast show. Stay after the 7:10 p.m. game against the Dodgers. Relax and watch Petco Park's largest fireworks display set to music from the 80s. Buy your tickets now at Padres.com or at the box office. More on yesterday's 9-7 victory against the Reds in Cincinnati right after this.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back to the show. Talking about yesterday's exciting 9-7 victory over the Reds, and so many things. Sometimes you have games where you're like, oh, that was just not a fun game. Nothing to talk about. There are so many things to talk about from yesterday's game. Our buddy Jellyman had a question, an interesting tweet if New York, he's talking about the replay officials in New York, had ruled Alonso's Grand Slam would have been fan interference, would the Padres have gotten two or three runs? I think on that one it's up to the umpire's judgment, right, as to how many runs would have scored. It's not automatically a ground rule double.
Right, it's not – well, yeah, but generally they're going to rule ground rule double.
Right,
but,
so probably only two score there.
But there wasn't fan interference.
And that was another bizarre moment of the game, and I think maybe the Reds were just reaching because things had gone so horribly wrong because you saw that live, and the guy stood there, put the hands in front of his in front of himself. He didn't reach out.
I mean,
if you're going to have people sit at the top of the wall, the guy's allowed to protect himself from a home run ball, and there was no question that was a home run.
He didn't interfere with the glove. He didn't interfere with anything.
It was bizarre. I mean, I don't blame the Reds for asking them to check it out, but
But he's back behind the. I mean, that was a desperation challenge. I mean, there's no way that's going to be reversed. There's no way he leaned over the wall. To me, it was just totally bogus.
So you had an interesting game. Now, obviously, Andrew Kastner did not pitch his best, and I want to get into a little more of the numbers and some of the things that he's going through a little bit later. But the defense obviously struggled a little bit behind him. And Will Venable, who has really been a difference maker in the field for this team since Will Myers moved to first base and then through the disabled list, he's really kind of shorn up the outfield defense. But yesterday was a rough day for him. Two plays in a row, he completely misjudges the ball, and what should be relatively routine fly ball outs turn into extra base hits, extend the lead from 4-1 to 5-1, then 6-1. And I think we've talked a little bit about some of the – he's had struggles at day games in this ballpark in the past.
In this ballpark in the past.
As well have other people.
And also botched one coming in. He also broke late on a ball coming in.
But just a nightmare scenario for Will there. And you could tell. And nobody appreciated this victory more than Will Venable. I can guarantee you that much.
Well, the time that he's the situation that he's involved with there, and we saw also he wasn't the only one that had a little problem, is the sun is setting behind that ballpark at that time. And also, it's not setting, but it's going down. Also, there's a lot of white in the stands of that ballpark, and I don't understand quite why. It's sort of painted to be like a river boat. And there's a lot of white around. And he has had problems there in the past on a Sunday afternoon. I remember covering a game there where he struggled. And so, yeah, he did have – that's not Will Venable. I mean, 95% of the time, he does not have those. In fact, I'd say it's even a bigger margin than that.
Right, absolutely. And to see the routes that he took to those balls just be so dramatically wrong.
They were totally lost.
That those are the things that sometimes you see in spring training games because the sun and the sky are so big there that it just completely misplayed, and that's an anomaly. That's not what this guy is. He is a good – I mean, I wouldn't say he's an amazing center fielder by most standards, but he's a very good defensive center fielder.
I don't know how many other ballparks in the major leagues where you would have – I mean, the seats, of course, are a color. They're all red. But as you get up to the press box and you get up to the superstructure behind the seats, it's white. So you've got the ball coming up out of white, out of red, then white, and then into the sun. And it's got to be hard to pick the ball. I know it's hard to pick the ball up there.
Yeah, obviously. And then in the top of the second, after Andrew Kastner struggled a little bit, Padres get a couple runners on, and you just see one of those base running mistakes that we've seen a few times this year that we've talked about having to clean up. Fly ball to center, and I think Yonder's on second, Middlebrooks on first. Yonder tags. He's going to make it, it looks like. It looks like a good play, and Middlebrooks is trying to cheat. They cut the ball. The shortstop cuts it, and he's thrown out at second base. And when you're trying to get back into a ball game, those are the mistakes that are really going to hurt you. Now, luckily, again, Will Middlebrooks – only second to Will Venable as far as who's more excited about that win, because that was a big moment and a big mistake in the ball game.
That was he should have never tried to go to second. And even if they had a play, and I think they might have had a play on Yonder at third, to be honest. But even if they did have a play on the guy at third, if you see the guy to go to second, that's an automatic out.
You've got him.
Right. So you're not letting the ball go through because you're taking the sure out that you've got at second, because that guy should never be going running behind him.
It was just a bizarre, sloppy game on a lot of levels. Really fun to see the offense pick the team back up, though.
But those are the ones, if you win, Mike, if you win, it's like a double bonus because you shouldn't have won that game.
Right. That's one of the middle 42. You're going to win 60, lose 60.
Right.
It's what you do in the middle 42 right. that really make the difference, and that's one of the middle 42
right.
for
and
sure.
That's,
right?
That's a game that you should not have won, and the Padres actually have lost some games like that where they should have won, and they didn't. So this gets one back in that column.
It really does. I want to remind everybody, we heard from Jellyman earlier, but get with us on Twitter, hashtag PadresSH. Send us your questions, your comments. Let us know what you're thinking about this Padres team like you always do. Also, we've got the live chat, Padres.com/social hour. Chat with other friends, other Padre fans. Moderator Becky in there. Talk Padres baseball. When we come back from the next break, want to get a little deeper dive into Andrew Cashner and some of the things going on with him, some numbers that I saw heard on the radio that are a little disturbing, and kind of get Bill's thoughts on what exactly those mean. But first, to guarantee the opportunity to purchase tickets to the 2016 All-Star Game at Petco Park, become a Padres season ticket member at the gold or platinum level and lock in your chance to get tickets. To learn more, visit Padres.com/ASG. We will continue with more Padres Social Hour presented by United Airlines right after this.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back to the AMR studios. It is a quiet Sunday morning here in the Western Metal Supply Company building. All the lights are off. It's dark. It's like Blooper's little realm, and it's quite disturbing, actually. It's weird to be in here when there's not much activity. We haven't had too many of these Sunday mornings.
Right, early Sunday morning on the East Coast, this is what you get.
It is. But, hey, we're here to talk about Padres baseball. And yesterday's starter, Andrew Cashner, struggled. I think his post-game remarks pretty much sum that up. He didn't think he was doing much well. And a few things I heard yesterday that were really, really interesting to me. One, he struggled early in the game. Of his runs, he's given up 26 have been in the first three innings, and only 13 have been in the rest of the game. Now he's only gone through the seventh inning, but he's really struggled early. And another thing that I found even more interesting was that he's getting hit in the first two pitches of at-bats. So on the first pitch of an at-bat, he's giving up, or batter's hitting 464 on the first pitch. And whether he goes to a 1-0 count or an 0-1 count, he's basically, guys are hitting like 500 off of him in the first two pitches. That's very interesting, and you would think that's something that's fixable. If you see those types of numbers, you have to change your approach and what you're doing early in counts, right?
Well, his location is terrible. I mean, yesterday, his location on some of his pitches were really, really bad. I mean, he was up in the zone. I mean, if you're Andrew Cashner at his best, is throwing good breaking balls early in the count and keeping them down. And then he can throw that high fastball up there and either get you to pop up when he's ahead in the count or strike out. And yesterday, his pitches were not down in the zone, and he didn't have a lot of life on the high fastball. And they were teeing it up on him. The last two starts now have not been good for Cashner. And I know he's dealing with a lot, but the last couple starts have not been good.
It's almost like we've seen a different approach from him this year, because I would say I feel like his strikeouts are up. He's striking out more guys. I feel like his velocity is up. He was hitting 99 yesterday.
Not always good.
That's my point, is that when he was in the bullpen, yes, he would touch 99. He would touch 100.
Right.
When he moved into the rotation, he knew he had to take a step back, use his sinker more, use more of a moving pitch, and one, I think he's had some frustrations with strike zones and not feeling like he can get a called strike on his sinker. So that's why he's gone more to the four-seam fastball. He's talked about that. But I feel like he needs to kind of get back to what he was doing last year. And that's going to help him go deeper in games, because he hasn't even had the opportunity
right.
to go deep into games,
no.
even when he has pitched well.
Well, you can't let the umpire, because you've had a couple bad calls and umpires, you can't let them get in your head. You have to do what you got to do. And it's not like they're taking pitches, because they're not. They're swinging at the first couple. You still have to make quality pitches. And to me, the big deal with Cash, the biggest change I've seen with Andrew right now is that he is not making quality pitches consistently. He'll make a good pitch, but then he won't follow it up with a good pitch. And it's correctable, but, yeah, it's got to be corrected by him. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with his mechanics. He's just missing his spots. And some of it, you know, I will say one thing. I would like to see Norris move just a scooch closer to the plate because I think this is going to sound crazy, but I think a lot of balls that cross the plate as strikes, he's not getting calls on because he likes to set up deep in the catcher's box, and I can understand that. But you set up deep in the catcher's box, and a lot of times the umpire is gauging where the pitch is from where you catch it, and it's going to be down. On a breaking ball, it's going to be down. And I've talked to a couple catchers over there. They like to get as close to the plate as they can to set up, you know, without being, you know, obnoxiously close where they're going to get hit by the bat. But they like to be close because if they catch the ball where the umpire still thinks it's a strike, it's a strike.
This is an interesting topic because I have not heard this discussed before online anywhere, that where he sets up, and you're saying that you feel like he might be a little too far away from the plate. That, and that makes a lot of sense because the ball is going to move even more by the time it gets to him. And I don't know if maybe he's been hit by a bat in the past, or whatever the case may be. And
catcher set up, different catchers set up different places. I'm not blaming. I'm not criticizing his catching ability.
It shouldn't be his job for the umpire to call the strike zone properly. But
right. Right. It's not his job. The umpire should call a strike when it crosses the plate. But I've talked to a couple catchers in the past, Dave Duncan being one, and he always thought that sometimes catchers can send mixed messages where they set up because sometimes the umpire will look at where the catcher catches the ball to make a decision on whether it's a strike or a ball. And I don't know. I don't know for sure, but it just seems to me that there have been strikes that they have not gotten calls on, and I'm just wondering if it is a little bit because of where he sets up.
Definitely an interesting question to pose. Kind of getting back to Cashner and really Tyson Ross as well. We've talked about, between this year and last year, the potential that these guys have to be ace pitchers, and both have struggled this year. Both have tremendous stuff. Tyson, I think, has been a little more mechanical, and he's just really struggled to find his way. Still putting up quality numbers, even though he has looked not nearly as dominant. But I guess my question for you is, at what point are these guys, do these two guys need to make the step into being what they're going to be, whether it is that one or two pitcher, or are they going to stay where they're at as a very solid 2-3 in the rotation pitcher? Like, when do you worry about them not making that next step?
Well, I think Tyson's sort of made the next step. I mean, even this year, although he hasn't been spectacular, he's been darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Cash is, I mean, I don't know quite what's, I mean, I know he's dealing with a lot, but even some of the earned runs, when there are errors behind him, he hasn't been able to get the last out in the inning. He hasn't been able to close out the inning when an error's been made. And I don't know quite what that is. I don't think his location, his command is what it was last year. But I do think that there's a reason why he gives up runs. And he does have to make some corrections. I think the time's coming that he has to do it.
Yeah, 5 walks yesterday, gives up 2 hits to the pitcher. I think those are the things that you worry about. Like, okay, you do have some bad defense behind you, but you've got such great stuff and such a live arm that you should not be giving up hits to the pitcher. Those are the things that you should be using to get out of innings. And those are the things that he's missing right now to make that next step, right?
And the 3 runs in the first. I mean, you go out there. I don't know how many times this year, and it'd be an interesting to look, that even with the errors where, okay, they wind up being unearned runs, but he gives up the hit to fall behind early in the game. And, I mean, his earned run average is 6 in the first inning, but he's given up, like, another 3 runs, unearned runs.
I think it's more than that, yeah.
Right, so just in the first inning.
Exactly.
So I think he's given up 11 runs in the first inning of his 12 games, which is a lot. And you, sometime in there, you have to give up a hit to have that happen. It's just not all errors that lead to the unearned runs. So, yeah, I know he's dealing with a lot, and I really like Andrew Cashner, and I love his stuff, but he does have some things to correct.
He really does. And we talk about these things because we want him to fulfill his potential, and that's what he wants.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a very competitive guy who has so much promise and potential, and I think he's saddled a little bit by something completely out of his control in that he was traded for an all-star first baseman. He has no control over that. He's going to be the pitcher he's going to be,
right.
But he's always going to be judged by what Anthony Rizzo does, which is not fair to him. That's on the ball club. That's not on Andrew Cashner. But he still has that potential, and he can get there to being a one or a
two
pitcher.
Well, I don't – actually, I've never looked at that trade as being a win or a lose. I mean, they did it because they had to.
But you're a rational human being.
Right. But there's nothing in that trade that really plays onto Andrew Cashner that you can hold him responsible for.
My point is, of course you're not,
right,
because you make sense. But fans and people on
that's
what he's going to be judged by most of the people that follow this team. Because
Right. Wouldn't
it be great to have Anthony Rizzo on this team, whether you love Andrew Cashner or not? I mean, that's a fantastic first baseman. So
sure, that's true. But they're not hurting there right now anyway.
Nope.
It's going to be very interesting when Myers comes back where he plays.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that soon. A little more updates on him as he's getting closer and closer. So this team's getting exciting. It's getting fun.
Right.
As your hometown pet retailer, Petco is proud to partner with the Padres and Petco Park. Thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. More Padres Social Hour coming up right after the break.
Welcome back to the AMR Studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
And welcome back, Bill Center, Mike Grace, Blooper, Becky, Lawrence. We're all here on a Sunday morning talking Padres baseball. And what's a Sunday morning without Cholula for your eggs or anything else delightful? Bill is on the Cholula hot seat. Actually, a fun, lively chat in the live chat today, padres.com/social hour. A couple different questions in here. Bill, what's up with Bud never starting Jed? Is he trade bait? That's from Friar Blue. What's your take on Jed Jericho? Hasn't got a lot of starts lately. There's going to have to be a move at some point when Myers comes off and Melvin Upton come off.
Right.
You've got to figure out whether it's Jed, whether it's Spangenberg, whether it's Barmas or Amarisa, somewhere along those lines, somebody, unless you're really going to go to a short bullpen, which I really don't see them doing, you got to figure out. What's your take on what's going on with Jed at this point?
No, I mean, Jed's had moments where he's looked good, but he's had more moments where he's looked bad. I mean, a couple nights ago, he had two at-bats, one as a pinch hitter, one as a second baseman, or I guess both as second baseman, actually. Came into the game in a double switch, looked really not good on two straight at-bats, struck out twice. He hasn't yet answered a lot of the things that he needs to answer. And the question is, I think right now they're better with Spangenberg, and they've got Solarte behind him at second base than with Jericho. Jed can give you the big long ball. He can hit the ball as far as anybody. But in terms of just being a regular player, he's down to .215 in his batting average. He's not drawing walks. He's not getting on base. And defensively, Spangenberg probably has a little more range. He's more adept at playing second than Jed, even though he's played there for 2 years. I think that it is going to either be Barmas or Spangenberg or Jericho that goes when Melvin Upton Jr. is activated. Now, the first, when Myers comes back, Abraham Almonte goes out. But the second one is
a week away,
right,
from Melvin being
right
there. Or unless something else happens with him, whether it's injury-wise and he has to go back on the DL or something like that. They're making a decision on Melvin Upton, but he will likely be on this active roster.
Well, it'll be slowed up a couple days because you've got 20 games and Will Myers
is
going to
play. And he's not playing every day out
right
there.
Right, and Will Myers is going to play a couple days in center when he's over there. So it'll probably be backed up to like 10 days now before you got to make that decision on Melvin Upton Jr. But at the same time, when that decision comes down, you have to put him on your major league roster or release him or DFA him. I can't see them doing that because if they do that, everybody will just let him go through waivers and then somebody will pick him up and you'll owe his entire contract. So he's going to be here and somebody's going to go out. And I would think that it's either going to be Barmas, but you don't have a backup shortstop if you do that, or it's going to be Spangenberg or Jerko. So I would imagine right now it's going to be Spangenberg or Jerko go out. I would think I'd lean towards keeping Spangenberg.
Yeah, no, I understand. I guess my two cents is at some point, Jerko is not going to be a successful bench player beyond his salary. For him to be successful, he's got to get it going as an everyday player, and you got to play him. But Buddy will pick the right time to see when that's going to happen.
But can you play him if he's not contributing? I mean,
you want to be
in this to win it.
You can, because if you get Kemp, Upton, Norris, you get Myers back, if you've got enough other guys in the lineup.
That's a lot of ifs.
Sure, but it's getting there. The lineup is getting there. You get Myers back with Kemp heating up, Upton continuing to be what he's been. Norris has had a couple off days, but I still feel good about him in the lineup. Yonder doing what he's doing.
So you'll put this guy 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts every game. You put him back in the lineup.
At some point, you have to.
Okay.
I think you do. I think you have to see what he is. You have to give him the chance to be what he was 2 years ago.
Well, I think
he's earned that on some level.
Right. I think that he had that chance at the start of the season and didn't look good. I know they've worked with him an awful lot. Mark Kotze and Alonzo Powell have worked with him an awful lot, which is why he didn't go out earlier, because they wanted him up here so they could work on him.
No, that's
doesn't seem to have solved anything. And to be honest, you know, you talk about trading him. Nobody's going to trade for him right now.
Right.
Because, one, he's got a big contract, and two, he's not contributing. So I think that this might be the time where you do send him to the minors to get some at-bats, to get some confidence rebuilt, and then bring him back.
Another comment in the live chat talking about the Latos trade. Maybe a couple years ago you felt a little worse about it. Now where Latos is and what Yonder is doing, that trade looking a little better. Dosh in the live chat mentions that, but also says maybe Kashner can one day turn into a Kevin Brown type player. That's not a terrible comparison. He doesn't quite as good of a sinker, but he's got a sinker, a live arm, and Kevin Brown matured later as a pitcher. He was getting towards the end of his career when he had his success with the Marlins and with the Padres and with the Dodgers after that. As a Ranger, not quite as much success. It took him a while to get to that success. So that might not be a terrible comparison.
No, not at all. And I think, I mean, Kevin Brown was a one-of-a-kind, totally one-of-a-kind personality. Cash has shown he's got the stuff. He just has to put it all together, and he has to be more consistent with what he's doing.
He really does. He really does. All right, you're off the Cholula hot seat.
Okay.
Well played, sir. It was getting hot. The sun's beating on you. I don't want you to
Sun's cleared me.
Now it's fine.
It's still on you.
It's still on me, but you were on the hot seat. Cholula hot sauce will elevate the flavor of your food with its delicious blend of unique peppers and authentic spices. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wood cap and proud partner of the San Diego Padres. Another question here. From Friar Blue. Do we get Elvis Andrus as our new shortstop? A lot being made of shortstop. Lexi starting to pick it back up a little bit, but has struggled a lot. Barmas hasn't played much. He's done okay when he's been in there. I think, you know, the shortstop hole, very much like you were talking about what Jed or maybe even Spangenberg provided at the second base position, maybe you do start thinking about trying to upgrade at shortstop if there is something out there. Now, Andrus is an interesting situation because he's got a pretty big contract, and that would be tough to take on.
Right. Well, I think that one thing that they could do here is they will have a surplus of outfielders in very short time, and particularly with Upton being a free agent, if you don't think you can sign him, as tough as it would be on the fans, if you don't think you can reach any agreement on an extension when he's a free agent, do you move him now? If you do, that's the one guy that may bring you a good shortstop. I do think you use your surplus of outfielders here to do something. And I think that shortstop might be one spot where you want to look at.
All right. One final question from David. When do we talk about draft? Padres are picking 51st. Interesting year for the draft since the Padres don't have an early draft pick.
We start talking about the draft about the 45th pick.
Right. That's when the Padres don't even get to be active in the first day of it.
You can just sort of sleep through the first round and a half, and then about 45, okay, who's still on the board? That's when we start thinking about the draft.
Exactly.
Right now, I saw a tweet out there, somebody – a couple days ago thinking, hey, do you think the Padres have a shot at one of these top 10 guys? Not at 51.
Not going to happen. Looking for paradise? Maui Wowie Hawaiian presents delicious made-to-order fresh fruit smoothies as well as adult beverage smoothies. Visit the new Maui Wowie locations inside Peco Park at the Park of the Park or the Mercado. They are also located in Oceanside, Camp Pendleton, and Temecula. More Padres Social Hour coming up right after this.
You want some Padres talk?
We've got that.
Padres Social Hour returns now, presented by United Airlines.
Sunday fun day here at Petco Park. Padres Reds coming up at 10 o'clock. Today's game, going for the sweep, something the Padres would really, really like to have happen. Let's take a look at the lineup that will likely get that sweep. The lineup, as always, presented by United Airlines, proud to fly the Padres and fans to every away game. United, fly the friendly skies. And there it is today. Venable again leading off in center. Norris, Upton, Kemp, Alonso, Middlebrooks, Spangenberg at second. Clint Barmas getting the start at short, and Odrysa Merritt Despaigne. Let's talk a little bit about Odrysa Merritt Despaigne. Has not faced Cincinnati in his career. We've seen him have a lot of success the first time he's faced teams, so I think that's a very positive thing going for today.
If you haven't seen it before, a lot of arm angles, a lot of different pitches. But, again, I think I agree with Buddy. He's still, for all of his arm angles and for everything that he can throw, he's at his best when he's working off of his fastball and not trying to trick people. You know, the lineup now for the last five games and basically what we've fallen into is it's pretty much the same every day in order of positions. The only switch we've seen is the name of the second baseman is different and the name of the shortstop has been different. So we've now pretty much have a set lineup.
Which is good. I think it really lets hitters settle into their roles and feel good about knowing where they're going to be in the lineup every day. And fans can stop complaining about Buddy changing the lineup all the time.
Right. Well, and that's always been to me a really bad. He changes the lineup all the time. In past years, he's had to change the lineup because he didn't have anybody that could really play all the time.
That's absolutely the case. All right, when we come back, we're going to get to the head-to-head challenge. Blooper actually succeeding, so it's a horrible day here. The next party in the park presented by Southwest Airlines is happening on Friday, June 12th, as the Padres face the Dodgers at 7:10 p.m. The party starts at 5 and features $5 food and drinks and live music. Get tickets at the box office or at padres.com/party. Padres Social Hour finishing up here in just a couple minutes with the head-to-head challenge.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
Final segment of the show, Bill Center, Mike Grace, getting you ready for the Reds-Padres here on a Sunday morning. The head-to-head challenge presented by Supercuts, and we're going to spend about 20 seconds on this. Blooper, show the standings. Blooper,
presented by Blooper today.
I know. He won yesterday. He actually had Yonder Alonso. That's his second grand slam of the guy he's picked. He's winning over the couch. Bill's going to change that today. Blooper, you're picking first. Who are you choosing to be on your team?
Justin Upton.
All right. He thinks Justin Upton's going to get back into it. Who's going to have a better day?
I want the left-hander against Johnny Cueto. I'm going to take Alonso, who likes hitting it at that ballpark.
See, now you made a mistake, Blooper, because your guy gets you a grand slam yesterday, and you didn't stick with him. You had the opportunity.
I don't make mistakes. I'm in the lead.
Wow. I cannot tell you how much I'm pulling for you, Bill.
You know what? I can't. I don't make mistakes. This is Seth Foster talking.
I know. We're lucky to be on the air, but he doesn't make mistakes.
Mistake is his middle name. Seth Mistake Foster.
The Supercuts head-to-head challenge at Supercuts. They pay attention to every detail, the cut, the lines, the hot towel finish, so you can feel sharp, clean, and ready to go. Find a Supercuts near you at supercuts.com. Oh, my God. Can you believe this guy steers this ship?
No, it's
unbelievable. It really is.
We're rudderless.
Let's stop talking about this joker. Yesterday, Tyson Ross got to fly to D.C. He pitched Friday, goes to the game to watch his little brother make his major league debut. And how many managers would have let a player do that? Buddy said, that's a hell of an idea.
Right, that's
I like
a great
it.
Idea. I like the way that Buddy even talked about it. He says, yeah, I hadn't thought about it. Go ahead. It's a great idea.
I mean, there's no way he could have pitched. There was nothing he could have done for the team that day.
And there's nothing on the first day after a pitcher pitches. He doesn't do anything.
No.
So it's a great day.
Really cool. He got to see his little brother's debut since he didn't get to make it with the Padres.
Right.
So congratulations, Joe Ross. Thank you, Bill. Fun show.
Thanks. That's all. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Enjoy the game today. 10-10, Padres-Reds. Thanks, everybody.